This is lesson two, in which we will cover the overview of Daniel chapters 7 through 12. As I did last week, I'd like to start by quoting K. Arthur. On page 9 of your workbooks, under number 2B, the second paragraph, K. writes this: "We commend you for disciplining yourself to do this study. Hangeth thou in there. Do what you can, and remember, whatever you get done is more than nothing at all. So don't allow the flesh or Satan to defeat you by pointing out what you can't or didn't do. Remember, Satan is the accuser of the brethren. God is the God of all hope. Press on." Studying this way is a learning process that does not come overnight. It happens by doing until the doing is a habit. A wonderful one. And that's the end of the quote. Let's begin by reviewing where we are in Israel's history. Under its first three kings, Saul, David, and Solomon, Israel was a united kingdom. But because of Solomon's disobedience and idolatry, God cut Solomon's life short, and shortly after his son Rehoboam ascended the throne, Israel was divided by civil war into two kingdoms. Rehoboam reigned over only the southern kingdom, which was called Judah, and the northern kingdom, which was called Israel, was ruled over by Jeroboam, son of Nebat. I use that phrase, Jeroboam, son of Nebat, to distinguish this first king of the northern kingdom of Israel from a later king with the same name of Jeroboam. Approximately 200 years after the division of Israel into two kingdoms, the northern kingdom, Israel, was taken into captivity by the Assyrians, and for all practical purposes, it ceased to exist. The southern kingdom, Judah, did not learn from God's judgment of the northern kingdom, and so, almost 100 years later, God gave Judah into the hands of the Babylonians. Jehoiakim was the king of Judah at the time of the first of three sieges against Jerusalem, and Daniel and his friends were taken into captivity at that time. This chart is on page 125 of your workbook, and we've looked at this one before as well. Remember that the numbers can be confusing when you are talking about the times before the birth of Christ, because the numbers grow smaller as you move forward in time toward the birth of Christ. Here's the birth of Daniel, although scholars are not certain exactly when he was born. Jehoiakim was the king of Judah at the time that Daniel was taken into captivity. We saw that on the last chart. And according to this chart, that would have been when Daniel was approximately 15 years old. Remember, however, that other scholars think he may have been as young as 12 or 13. We have also considered the fact that Daniel was born during the reign of Josiah, at a time when there was a great revival of faith and obedience to God. The chart also shows that Daniel lived a long life in Babylon, even living past the fall of the Babylonian Empire when it was conquered by the Medo-Persians. After class last week, someone asked where the Babylonian Empire was. I told her that we were going to cover it in this week's lesson, but really it's in next week's. Nevertheless, it was a very good question, and this is a good place to answer it. Here is a map that shows the current political boundaries of the countries in the Middle East. Here's Israel, Lebanon above it, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and over here, Egypt. Now, the resolution on this map is poor, so it looks a little blurry, but it is the one map I could find that shows the Babylonian Empire placed on top of the current political boundaries. You can see that the Babylonian Empire encompassed what is now Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, part of Saudi Arabia, and part of Turkey. What this map does not show is that the Babylonian Empire extended down into Egypt as well, along the sides of the Nile River. This map shows the extension of the Babylonian Empire down into Egypt. These two maps show you that the Babylonian Empire was huge. While it was not as large as the Persian or the Greek or the Roman empires that would follow, it was nevertheless geographically enormous. This is a slide that you saw last week. This is a summary of the first six chapters, but because Daniel is a whole book and not two books, I want to review it so that we can understand the whole context of Daniel. In chapter 1, Daniel and his three companions were taken captive and put in the service of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. In chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream of a statue, and the God of heaven who reveals mysteries gave Daniel the interpretation of the king's dream. In chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow to the golden image in the plain of Dura, and God delivered them from the fiery furnace. In chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar again had a dream, this time of a great tree that was chopped down, but the stump was preserved. Again, Daniel interpreted the dream, and the dream was fulfilled in Nebuchadnezzar's temporary insanity until he acknowledged the sovereignty of the God Most High. In chapter 5, Belshazzar, who was the last king of Babylon, witnessed a hand writing on the wall. Daniel interpreted the handwriting, and the prophecy of the handwriting was fulfilled that very night as the Medes overthrew the Babylonians. The events of chapter 5 occurred after the events of chapter 7 and 8, which we will look at in just a little bit. In chapter 6, God delivered Daniel from the lion's den when Daniel violated the decree of Darius. Here are some general observations that we made last week on the first six chapters of Daniel. These six chapters cover the whole period that Daniel was in Babylon under the kings of Gentiles. These six chapters are about kings, primarily Babylonian kings, over whom the King of Heaven rules. Three times a man or men of God refused to compromise his belief in the Lord. In chapter 1, we saw that Daniel and his companions did not violate the Mosaic dietary laws by eating the king's choice food or wine. In chapter 3, we saw that Daniel's companions refused to bow down and worship the golden image which Nebuchadnezzar had set up in the plain of Dura, as a result of which they were thrown into the fiery furnace. And in chapter 6, we saw that Daniel refused to give up worshiping God as required by the decree of Darius, as a result of which he got to spend a night with the lions in their den. Another common theme that threaded its way through these six chapters was that Daniel interpreted dreams and visions which revealed future kingdoms. And the final observation from the first six chapters last week was, the kingdom of God is the only one which will last forever. Last week, as we did the overview of the first six chapters, we talked a little bit about the chronology. How did each chapter relate to the prior one or to the following one? I thought I would use this chart to lay out the chronology, but there is an important caveat first. Because of the size of my arrows on the chart, I could not be exact. Furthermore, for some of the chapters, I can only estimate when on the timeline they occurred. Chapter 1 tells us that the events of that chapter occurred in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim. We also know that it was the year that Nebuchadnezzar ascended the throne, because history tells us that Nebuchadnezzar's father, Nabopolassar, you can see him there on the chart right before Nebuchadnezzar. This father, Nabopolassar, died during the time that Nebuchadnezzar was besieging Jerusalem the first time. Nebuchadnezzar, therefore, had to hurry back to Babylon to ensure that the throne would pass to him, and historians believe that that is why relatively few captives were taken during the first siege. We know from chapter 1 that Daniel and his companions were to be educated in the Babylonian language and culture and literature for 3 years. Chapter 2 tells us that the events recorded there occurred in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. By our methods of accounting, we would consider then that Daniel and his friends must still be in that 3-year period of training. But again, history tells us that the Babylonians used a different method of accounting from the Israelites and from us. The Babylonians did not count the year that a king ascended the throne as the first year of his reign. So it is probable that the events of chapter 2 occurred near the end of the training period of Daniel and his friends. Either way, however, chapter 2 happened relatively soon after chapter 1. The events of chapter 3 have to occur after the events of chapter 2 because the three companions, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, have been appointed to the administration of the province of Babylon, and that happened at the end of chapter 2. Moreover, it is possible that the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2, that he was the head of gold, put into his mind the idea of constructing this gold image for his people to worship. The only time clue we are given in chapter 4 is that it was still the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. While the first three chapters do not have a lot of time between them, it is possible that this chapter occurred after some time had passed. Since, however, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom was restored to him when he acknowledged the sovereignty of God, Nebuchadnezzar probably ruled for a while long after the events of this chapter. When we get to chapter 5, we are told specifically when those events occurred. It was the very last night of the Babylonian Empire, and it also happened to be the very last night of Belshazzar's reign as king of Babylon and the very last night of his life. That arrow we can place precisely on the timeline. Chapter 6 occurred after chapter 5. We are told that it was during the reign of Darius. By the way, all my adult life I have pronounced that Darius, but I looked it up during the summer and it is actually pronounced Darius. So, Darius it is. Verse 28 of chapter 6 tells us that Daniel enjoyed success under Darius and Cyrus the Persian. If you look at all the arrows that I've placed on the timeline now, you can see that the first 6 chapters of the book of Daniel cover almost the entire life of Daniel from his youth until he was approximately 80 years old. And he interpreted dreams and visions for kings over the span of that lifetime. Now, last week I told you that chapter 7 and chapter 8 occur chronologically after the events of chapter 4, but before the events of chapters 5 and 6. We'll see why that is in just a moment. Let's take a look at chapter 7. With Daniel's dream of the 4 beasts that represent 4 kingdoms. Last week, we picked out some key words for chapter 2. Since chapter 7 parallels chapter 2, I thought we could do that again. Remember that keywords are words that show the emphasis of the text. They unlock the meaning of the passage or the chapter that you're looking at. Now, keywords that I picked out may include some of the ones that you chose. I chose dream or vision, since that's the subject of the chapter. Also, king or kingdom, since the beasts represent kings and kingdoms. And I also chose dominion as a keyword, since that word is used repeatedly in the passage about the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven. I also liked all the descriptions of God in this chapter. The Ancient of Days was the name used most often, but others were the Most High and the Highest One. I have already mentioned that chapters 2 and 7 parallel one another. The statue in Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2 represents four coming kingdoms, and Daniel's vision in chapter 7 of the four beasts also represents four coming kingdoms. Both Nebuchadnezzar's dream and Daniel's vision end with a representation of the coming of God's kingdom, and both characterize God's kingdom as everlasting. Remember that in chapter 2, a stone that was cut out without hands struck the statue at its feet and destroyed the whole statue and then filled the earth. Let's nail down a few of the W's and the H of chapter 7. The when is in the first year of Belshazzar, the last king of Babylon. Looking at our timeline, since the events of chapter 5 occur on the very last night of the Babylonian kingdom, which also happens to be the very last night of Belshazzar's life, we know, therefore, that chapter 7 has to occur before chapter 5. Now that we have established the when, who had the vision in this chapter? It was Daniel. What was the vision? It was a vision of four beasts coming out of the sea and the ten horns with one little horn. The vision also included the coming of the Son of Man on the clouds of heaven and his being presented dominion by the Ancient of Days. For the theme, I wrote Daniel's vision of the four beasts, the ten horns, the Son of Man, and the Ancient of Days, and the interpretation of the vision was provided. Chapter 8 records Daniel's second vision, that of the ram and the male goat. The ram represented the kings of Media and Persia, and the goat represented the kingdom of Greece, with the large horn representing Alexander the Great. The interpretation of Daniel's vision in chapter 8 is given by the angel Gabriel, and this is the first time in the book of Daniel that future kingdoms are identified by name. We are also told that the visions of chapters 7 and 8 alarmed and exhausted Daniel. Let's get some of the W's. When did the events of chapter 8 occur? In the third year of Belshazzar. Thus, chapter 8 happened 2 years after the events of chapter 7, but it's still before the events of chapter 5, which were at the end of the Babylonian kingdom. Who had the vision? Daniel. What was the vision? In Daniel's vision, there was a ram with two horns, one of which was longer than the other. A male goat with one horn overcame the ram. The one horn was broken into four horns, and out of them came a small horn who stopped the sacrifices. The angel Gabriel interpreted the vision, explaining that the two horns on the ram represented the kings of Media and Persia, and the goat represented the kingdom of Greece. The large horn represented the first king, which we know from history was Alexander the Great. We also know from history that the four horns which replaced the large horn when it was broken represent the four kingdoms that Alexander's four generals split his kingdom into after his death. Out of one of those kingdoms came a rather small horn with a large place in history, both in accomplished history and also in anticipated history, prophecy. For the theme of the chapter, I wrote Daniel's vision of the ram and the goat, which was interpreted by Gabriel. Chapter 9 contains the magnificent prayer of Daniel and Gabriel's message of the 70 weeks and the covenant. When did the events of chapter 9 occur? In the first year of Darius. Looking at the timeline, remember that the events of chapter 5 happened on the very last night of the Babylonian kingdom and the very last night of Belshazzar's life. Therefore, the events of this chapter, chapter 9, must follow on the heels of the events of chapter 5. Remember that the events of chapters 7 and 8 occurred in between chapters 4 and 5. Chapter 9 fits in immediately after chapter 5. Although it is difficult to read the numbers now on this timeline, you can see that Belshazzar's feast, at which he saw the handwriting on the wall, that is chapter 5, you can see that it is sandwiched in between Daniel's vision of chapter 8 of the ram and the goat, and then Daniel's prayer of chapter 9. The ruling king at the time of Daniel's prayer was Darius. In this chapter, Daniel was reading the writings of Jeremiah, which we looked at last week, in which God decreed that the time of the exile would be 70 years. Realizing that the time of the exile was nearing its end, Daniel prayed on behalf of the nation of Judah, a prayer of confession and repentance, asking for forgiveness and reminding God that Jerusalem and his people were called by his name. While he was still praying, Gabriel came to him and gave him a cryptic outline of a time period of 70 weeks. Actually, the Hebrew word there is shabuim, and it is literally translated as sevens. The main points of Gabriel's instruction are the 70 weeks for Jerusalem and a particular covenant. Thus, the theme of the chapter is Daniel's prayer and Gabriel's message of the 70 weeks and the covenant. Chapters 10, 11, and 12 comprise one event. Chapter 10 is the prelude to a vision that is revealed in chapters 11 and 12. When do these three chapters take place? In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. You may remember that last week I told you that there was some difference of opinion among scholars regarding the identity of Darius and Cyrus. Some scholars think that they were co-regents, representing respectively the Medes and the Persians, but others believe that they are simply different names for the same man. Either interpretation, however, means that their reign or reigns began at the same time. Thus, since chapter 9 occurred in the first year of Darius / Cyrus, then the events of chapters 10 through 12 occurred 2 years later in the third year of the reign of Darius / Cyrus. The arrows are starting to get quite crowded on this timeline, so let's watch them come in. Chapters 7 and 8 come in after chapter 4, but before chapter 5. Then chapter 9 comes in right after chapter 5. And chapters 10 through 12 occur 2 years after chapter 9. On this slide, I have set out the chronology of the chapters with references to time periods, beginning with chapter 1, which occurred in 605 BC, which was the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim of Judah, and very near the beginning of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. The events of chapter 2 occurred shortly after the events of chapter 1. It was the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, which probably would have been the third year by Jewish reckoning. Chapter 3 occurred shortly after chapter 2. Nebuchadnezzar was still on the Babylonian throne. The events of chapter 4 occurred an indeterminate time after chapter 3, but Nebuchadnezzar was still on the throne. The events of chapter 7 occurred next in time. The year was 553 BC. And it was the first year of the reign of Belshazzar of Babylon. The events of chapter 8 occurred 2 years after the events of chapter 7. It was now the third year of Belshazzar's reign over Babylon. Chapter 5 comes next chronologically. The year was 539 BC. Remember that when we are talking about the years before Christ, the numbers get smaller as time goes forward. This chapter, chapter 5, records the end of Belshazzar's reign and the end of the Babylonian Empire. It is the beginning of the Medo-Persian Empire. Chapter 9 follows immediately after chapter 5. It is the first year of the Medo-Persian Empire under Darius. Chapters 10 through 12 are all one event that occurs 2 years after chapter 9. It is now the third year of Cyrus, perhaps Cyrus slash Darius. I have added on the slide a parenthetical to point out that chapter 11, while it is occurring at the same time period as chapters 10 and 12, is looking back 2 years in time to the time of chapter 9. And finally, I have put chapter 6 as the last in the chronological order. This happens near the end of Daniel's life under the reign of Cyrus and Darius of the Medo-Persian Empire. Here is another way to see the chronology more plainly. Chapter 1, then chapter 2, then chapter 3, then chapter 4, then chapter 7, then chapter 8, then chapter 5, then chapter 9, then chapters 10 through 12, and finally, chapter 6. In your handouts today, there was an elaborate chart from Precept with a timeline on it. There's a great deal of information on that chart, and you may peruse it at your leisure. One comment I would like to make about it now is that the white numbers in the black boxes are the references to the placement of the chapters on the timeline. There is a slight variation on that chart from what I have just worked out. This chart puts chapter 6 slightly before chapters 10 through 12, and I placed it slightly after chapters 10 through 12. The important thing to note is that the events of chapters 6 and 9, 10, 11, and 12 all occurred during the reign of the Medo-Persian Empire, and therefore they all occurred near the end of Daniel's life. Now let's look at chapters 10 through 12 in a little more detail, beginning with chapter 10. The ruling king was Cyrus. Who had the vision? Daniel. Just in this chapter, chapter 10, what is the vision of? It was the vision of a man dressed in linen. Although Daniel was with other men at the time the vision occurred, he was the only one who saw it, but the others became afraid and fled. The theme of this chapter, chapter 10, is simply Daniel's vision of this man in linen and his interaction with an angel prior to the revelation to come. A couple of interesting notes. Persia and Greece are mentioned again in this chapter, and also another angel is named Michael, your prince. Chapter 10 was the beginning of the vision that encompasses chapters 10, 11, and 12, and it is the prelude to the actual revelation from God that is in chapters 11 and 12. So chapter 11 begins the actual revelation from God in Daniel's vision. This chapter, chapter 11, consists of two parts. Verses 2 through 35 are prophecies that were future from Daniel's perspective, but that have been fulfilled precisely in history. Verse 36 of chapter 11 all the way through chapter 12, verse 13, contain prophecies that have not yet been fulfilled. In the first section of chapter 11, that is verses 2 through 35, you read about the kings of the north and the kings of the south. Remember that when Alexander the Great died, his Grecian empire was divided among four of his generals. These kings of the north and kings of the south derived from two of those four. The references to the kings of the north were to the Seleucid Empire. The references to the kings of the south were to the Ptolemaic Empire. And here, caught right in the middle between them, was Israel. Chapter 12 is the conclusion of the vision by the banks of the Tigris River. Verse 1 of chapter 12 says, "Now at that time, This is a reference to the time at the end of chapter 11. Remember that the divisions into chapters and verses were added later by man. As originally written, chapter 12, verse 1, followed immediately after chapter 11, verse 45. The time of distress mentioned at the beginning of chapter 12 is a reference to what Jesus called the Great Tribulation in Matthew 24, and Daniel is told that it will last for a time, times, and half a time, which we will learn means 3.5 years. There are quite a few other time references in this chapter. The man dressed in linen of verse 6 of chapter 12 is the same man in linen of chapter 10, which makes sense because this is all one event that's being described in these three chapters. Chapter 12 also offers hope after distress. Verse 3 says that those who have insight will shine brightly like the brightness of the expanse of heaven, and those who lead the many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. I chose the picture of the hiding place in Corrie ten Boom's house in Holland for this slide because the story of this Christian family hiding Jews to protect them from the Holocaust pictures what God expects of Christians in their treatments of Jews when Jews are being persecuted. Of course, this means that, like Corrie's family, the Christians who shelter the Jews will also suffer. I included in your handouts for today a copy of a letter that was written by Corrie ten Boom in 1974, in which she talks about the persecution of Christians in the world today, and she talks about how to prepare for times of tribulation and persecution. It is a sobering letter, but ultimately one that offers us hope. Meanwhile, back to chapter 12, Daniel is instructed to seal up the words until the end time. When verse 10 of chapter 12 says that none of the wicked will understand, but those who have insight will understand. Let's summarize these last six chapters of Daniel. Chapter 7 was Daniel's vision of four beasts, 10 horns, and the Son of Man, and an angel provides the interpretation of the vision. Chapter 8 contains Daniel's vision of the ram and the male goat, and this vision is interpreted by Gabriel. Chapter 9 contains Daniel's beautiful prayer and Gabriel's response with a message of the 70 weeks and the covenant. Chapter 10 is the introduction to Daniel's vision of chapters 11 and 12. It begins in chapter 10 with the vision of the man in linen. Chapter 11 is a continuation of what has begun in chapter 10. It contains a revelation of future kings and battles, both in the relatively near future, that is, near to Daniel's future, and also in the very end of times. Chapter 12 is a continuation of chapter 11, with the additional revelation of the Great Tribulation of 3.5 years, and additional time periods of 30 and then another 45 days. If you're wondering where I got the numbers 30 and 45, look at verses 11 and 12 of chapter 12. In verse 11, the time period is given of 1,290 days. That is the sum of 1,260 days, which is the equivalent of 3.5 years, plus 30 days. And the sum of 1,290 plus 45 is 1,335. We will get into the details of that next semester when we study chapter 12. In the homework, Kay asked whether you were able to identify segment divisions in Daniel. One clue might have been the fact that we did the overview in two parts, chapters 1 through 6 and then chapters 7 through 12. And that is, in fact, one way to divide the book, or in the case of this picture, the loaf of bread. In the first six chapters, the kings dreamed and Daniel interpreted. In the last six chapters, It was Daniel who dreamed or had the visions, and angels provided the interpretation. Dividing the book this way is consistent with the fact that the first six chapters are in chronological order, and while the last six chapters are also in chronological order, they dovetail into the events of the first six chapters. If you are dividing the book this way, you could characterize the first six chapters as historical and the last six chapters as apocalyptic. Like keywords or marking your text with symbols or colors as you observe it, dividing a book into segments is really another tool of observation and therefore leading to accurate interpretation and application. That being the case, there is at least one other possible division of the book of Daniel. I showed you this slide before to show you that the book began in Hebrew, but then switched to Aramaic at the beginning of chapter 2 and continued in Aramaic through the end of chapter 7. Then the book reverts back to Hebrew beginning with chapter 8 and continuing through the end of chapter 12. This change of language suggests another way you could divide the book. In this division, the first chapter and the first few verses of chapter 2 constitute the first segment or division of an introduction. The second segment is that written in Aramaic, and it describes the times of the Gentiles. And the third segment, written in Hebrew, talks about Israel in relation to the Gentiles. I didn't make a slide for this, but you might also divide the book into the chapters in which the Babylonian kingdom reigned. That could be one segment, and that would be chapters 1 through 5 and 7 and 8. Then the other segment would be the chapters in which the Medo-Persian kingdom reigned. That would be chapter 6 and chapters 9 through 12. Because it is clear, however, that the reason Daniel wrote the book was to reveal God's prophecy of coming earthly kingdoms and God's everlasting kingdom, we were able to see, even after looking at only the first six chapters, that the theme of the entire book is that God Most High rules over the realm of mankind. He is sovereign over all men and all nations or kingdoms. The type of literature of the book of Daniel could be called historical, and it could be called prophetic, and it could be called apocalyptic. The word apocalyptic comes from the Greek word apokalypsis, which means an unveiling or an uncovering. It is a Greek word that is translated into English as revelation. This means, therefore, that apocalyptic literature unveils the secret purposes of God that were previously unknown. In the case of the book of Daniel, the revelation concerns world events, beginning with the time of Daniel and leading all the way up to the messianic kingdom at the end of mankind's world history. God's word was unveiled or revealed mainly by visions and dreams given both to pagan kings and to Daniel. 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 19 says, "And so we have the prophetic word made more sure, to which you do well to pay attention as to a lamp shining in a dark place." In the last 2 weeks, in the introduction and in lesson 1, we have looked at many prophecies from Isaiah and Jeremiah, as well as that unnamed prophet of 2 Kings who prophesied about Josiah. And all these prophecies were fulfilled exactly when Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it, and God gave Judah into his hand. Just as Isaiah and Jeremiah had prophesied, God judged Judah for their ongoing sin in forsaking his law, and more importantly, in abandoning him. Because God is holy, he must and he will judge sin both in individuals and in nations. He fulfilled the words that he spoke through his prophets, and he will fulfill the prophecies that are as yet unfulfilled. We would do well to pay attention to these prophecies as to a lamp shining in a dark place, because they will teach us how we should live in the difficult days ahead. Our final hymn. Praise to the living God, all praised be his name, who was and is to be, for I the same. The one eternal God, ere aught that now appears, the first, the last, beyond all thought, his timeless years. Formless, all lovely forms declare his loveliness. Holy, no holiness of earth can his express. Lo, he is Lord of all, creation speaks his praise, and everywhere above, below, his will obeys. His spirit floweth free, high surging where he will. In prophet's word he spoke of old, he speaketh still. Established is his law, and changeless it shall stand, deep writ upon the human heart, on sea, on land. Eternal life hath he implanted in the soul. His love shall be our strength and stay while ages roll. Praise to the living God, all praised be his name, who was and is to be, for I the same. Amen.